She had a right to it, and she made this expression, noblesse oblige, mean being proud of her people. And I said, but nobody ever said it. And he sat down for hours and he told me about Negro people and what, you know, I read it in some books and never learned it in school. They don't teach it in history books. I couldn't know anything unless I really had moved up by then from the South and had been with Negro people who were terrified, you know, and couldn't do anything about it. And he didn't talk to me as a symbol of a pretty Negro chick singing in a club. He talked to me about my heritage. And that's why I always loved him. And I didn't even know, he didn't even speak to me as a leader, quote, Negro leader. And so I grew to think then about all the areas of it. And Josh taught me about singing about it, and I couldn't sing, you know, and I was fighting that kind of invert chauvinism from white people who says, well, she can't sing the blues, you know, and so I felt embarrassed. But by 1966, I find more and more myself calling upon the things that Paul said to me, because it's as of now, except he is not our leader. We eat up our leaders, you know. We history eats our leaders up. We eat them up. We drain them and we throw them out because everything moves so fast. But I don't think I could have felt the kind of pain I did and the kind of sense of recognition when I saw Alabama and hoses and dogs and children if I hadn't had Paul in my life.
Lena Horne talking about Paul Ropes, and James Gavin, take it from there, and also talk about her relationship with W.E.B. Du Bois and with Harry Belafonte.
Oh, that's a lot. My goodness. Her relationship with Paul Robeson ended up getting her in big trouble because, as you know, Paul Robeson was a dangerous man in the 1940s. And then in the late 40s, when he became a vocal enthusiast of the Soviet Union, to be near Paul Robeson in that brewing McCarthy era was very dangerous. Lena Horne was heavily involved in the 1940s with all of these human rights progressive groups that were burgeoning all over Los Angeles, New York City, and she ended up blacklisted in 1950 in Red Channels. Now, she was by that time out of MGM, none too happily, and was a nightclub singer, so the blacklist didn't really affect her very much. But certainly she met Harry Belafonte in those years, and Harry Belafonte was another fierce spokesman, deeply committed to human rights. Mr. Du Bois, we know about. He was really the grandfather of them all in those days. Lena Horne was a very brave woman and is not given credit for the activism that she did in the 1940s. At a time when a lot of the black performers that she knew were simply accepting the conditions of the day as the way things were and were afraid of rocking the boat and losing their jobs. And Lena never hesitated to speak her mind.
W.E.B. Du Bois.
Oh, a comment on W.E.B. Du Bois?
Yes.
She didn't, you know, he was more of a friend of her grandmother's than Lena. He is, generationally speaking, he came before Lena, and I know that she met him, but I don't think that she was a close friend of his. Her true mentors in the 1940s, politically speaking, were Robeson and Eleanor Roosevelt. Lena Horne adored Eleanor Roosevelt, and anything that these two people told her that they should sign or be a part of, she did.
And Harry Belafonte, long relationship with him, both political and artistic.
Long love-hate relationship that lasted on and off for about 30 years. And then by the early 1980s, these two strong egos finally exploded and clashed for the last time. But she and Harry were both beauties who suffered, I think, a similar identity crisis, and that their audiences were primarily white America, even upscale white America. And I think that both of them, for many years, had a big struggle in terms of how to define themselves as black artists. Harry, though, my God, I got to admire that guy for the risky political stands that he took throughout his life.
We're going to leave it there and then do a web exclusive for people to go to our website at democracynow.org to continue this conversation. James Gavin is the biographer of Lena Horne. His book, Stormy Weather, The Life of Lena Horne. That does it for our broadcast. Our website, democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkshire, Fidel Kadus, Aramante, Angela Kamen. I'm Amy Goodman with the Sharif Fidel Kadus. Thanks for joining us.
And you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, where the time, sorry, we had to assemble the studio. It was put in pieces. But it's back now. It's 6 o'clock time for Off the Wall. And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle. Say hi.
Hi.
Well, we're back. We're back live in the studio on this May 11th at 6.03 p.m. Finally back home after wandering around in the Balkans for the last three or so weeks. It was a blast, wasn't it?
It was an amazing time.
It really was. It really was. And greetings to all the people out there that we met. Surprising number of Off the Hook and Off the Wall listeners over there. Where do we find people? We found people in
Ljubljana, Slovenia.
Yeah, I'm forgetting all the names. Yeah, and Zagreb or Zagreb.
Yeah, Zagreb in Croatia.
Croatia, and also in Sarajevo, we found people. We found people in Belgrade. and Skopje, but they weren't listeners. They're friends. And it's just incredible to see the city through their eyes, see the cities through their eyes, see their countries, hear the stories, and all kinds of things like that. And we have lots of audio that we're going to be bringing to you in the weeks ahead. But mostly, it was just such an eye-opening experience. Most people, when they hear that you're going to a place like the former Yugoslavia, they say, why go there? Why not go someplace that's more on the beaten trail, more comfortable, more, dare I say, civilized? And boy, you know, I thought they were wrong before, but now I really know they're wrong.
They're very wrong. It's definitely a beaten trail, and they're quite civilized, and I'd say the beauty of the landscape, too. An amazing natural scene.
Yeah, in so many ways. Let's go over. We have some audio we're going to play of us coming back yesterday on the airplane. We're going to get to that in a little bit, because that was a story in and of itself. But I'd just like to go over the just for my own benefit, because I'll forget otherwise, where exactly we went and how we got there. We first of all, originally the plan was for us to fly into Munich, I believe, in Germany. Then take a train down from Germany through Austria and wind up in Slovenia and start the whole former Balkan Republic thing there. Hit every single one of the Balkans, the former Yugoslavia, that is, and then actually make our way into Albania, the mysterious country that I've always wanted to go to. And then from there, take a boat over to Italy, head up to Rome, and then fly back from Rome. Well, it wasn't to be.
No, it certainly wasn't.
And it's actually a very good thing, and I'll explain why in a second, but the reason it wasn't to be, well, Kyle, what was it that happened?
A volcano erupted.
Big volcano.
A very big volcano erupted in Iceland.
Of all places.
Of all places, in Iceland, a volcano erupted, and what was happening is the ash cloud was disrupting air traffic.
Yeah, and everybody, in fact, people I think are still stranded in some parts of the world, if you can believe that. This was, I guess, about almost a month ago when it started, when the volcanic ash cloud started to spread all throughout Europe, and flights were grounded. All flights were grounded into Europe. And people were saying, Emmanuel, what are you going to do? It's a catastrophe. It's a disaster. You can't possibly go anywhere.
Yeah. We had to sort of reconfigure our plans, and the airspace was shut down, and basically in the European Union, airspace is controlled by individual countries, so there's no unification, and basically everybody shut down. I believe that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much. We decided. First of all, when this was happening, airlines were giving you all kinds of options. Well, not all kinds of options, but very basic options. You could just reschedule or get a refund. And when we saw that our flight was going to be canceled, we opted to get a refund on that one and simply make other plans. And with the help of our friend Reed, who knew a lot about figuring out ways to quickly find tickets to various places, and hopefully this skill will come in handy for people trying to get to Hope in July, we were able to find alternative flights that flew a little bit to the south, and by flying to the south, they avoided the volcanic ash. It was incredible things that we had to say. Yes, we want to avoid the volcanic ash, so we'd like to fly in this particular pattern. And it worked. We flew into Prague, and then from Prague flew directly into Zagreb in Croatia. So by doing that, we left one day later, but we skipped that whole part about flying into Germany and then going through Austria to get to Slovenia. We just wound up directly in Croatia. So that gave us more time to actually explore the Balkans. And we also changed the part about taking the ferry over to Italy. Instead of doing that, we just fly out of Belgrade in Serbia. So, okay, we did that. We flew into Zagreb, and then from there we went up to Ljubljana. We have differing ways of pronouncing it. How do you pronounce it?
Ljubljana.
Isn't that what I just said, Ljubljana? I thought you had like a Y in there or something.
Ljubljana.
Ljubljana, okay.
I guess I pronounce it with a Y in the end part. But
yeah, all right. So then from Zagreb, you say Zagreb.
Zagreb.
We're going to settle this. Okay, and of course, they probably say it totally differently. Ljubljana, and then from there, we thought we could take a bus or a train to Split on the coast of Croatia, on the west coast of Croatia. Well, actually, that's the only coast they have. But we learned after we got to Ljubljana that wasn't possible. And a friend of ours in Ljubljana offered to drive us back to Zagreb very nicely. And this is the kind of hospitality that we were constantly being besieged with. People being so hospitable to us, buying us dinner, buying us drinks, just taking us everywhere we wanted to go, offering their homes to us. Incredible amounts of hospitality that simply floored me. Drove us all the way back to Croatia. I had to go through border checks and all that. And then from there, we took a little train out to Split. Actually, I should point out, we took the train up from Zagreb. No, I'm saying it that way. Zagreb to Ljubljana. We took a train, right? Yeah, I think we took a train
first. Yeah, we had taken a train to get there, but we accepted this gracious invitation to drive us.
Then a car back down. Because there weren't any trains, really, at convenient times. Apparently, only two a day or something. Trains really, they got to catch up on that part of it. Because we wanted to take trains everywhere, and turned out not to be the case. So we did take a train out to Split, a little two-car train, which went all the way out there, chugged through the mountains. That was kind of cool. And then after staying in Split, we made our way to Sarajevo, and that we had to do by bus. The bus to Bosnia. And took that, passed through Mostar, and wound up in Sarajevo. Then after being in Sarajevo, we did the very historic train ride that links Sarajevo to Belgrade, and that's a line that was shut down by the war, has not been opened for something like 15 years. They only opened it last December. There are four engine changes because of all the territories that they go through, two different passport checks, and a very slow train ride. I think it was something like 8 or 9 hours. That's only about 300 miles, or maybe even less. So we took that train. That was a real epic adventure. Wound up in Belgrade in Serbia. Just stayed there for a night because we were going to come back there later on. And then took a train out to Montenegro, to the capital city. And
Podgorica.
Podgorica. For some reason, I keep forgetting that name. Podgorica in Montenegro. Then from Podgorica in Montenegro, what do we do after that? This was the real adventure. From there is where we went to Albania.
Oh my gosh, yes. No, how could we forget?
We actually went to Albania. We did it. Oh, yes, we did. And we have audio to prove it. And we'll get to that in future shows. But to get there, there was no train. There was no bus. We had to do something that I think would scare the crap out of most people. And it kind of scared us a little bit. We hired a cab from the cheap-ass hotel we stayed at. That's another thing we're going to get into, is how cheap this all was. We hired a cab for something I think like 20 euro. And by the way, that's what they use in Montenegro. They use euros. It's kind of strange.
They're not part of the EU.
Part of the EU, but they use euros. Very interesting. Every other country, Slovenia is part of the EU. They use euros. But other countries use all different kinds of currency. So we hired this cab.
He took us to another cab.
Well, no, he took us to the border. The original plan was he was going to take us to the border. We were going to walk across the border into Albania. That sounded really kind of crazy. So he basically goes up to the border, makes this big U-turn, and we get out of the cab, and we're waiting to figure out what to do. I give the guy an extra, I think, maybe I gave him 5 euro extra as a tip, because I'm just like that. And he got really happy then, and he started giving us all kinds of tips as to, it's like I unlocked some kind of treasure chest. He started giving us all kinds of tips as to what to do once we got over the border. Then this other guy came out of nowhere, or just started talking to him from another car. Turns out he was a cab driver from Albania, or knew a cab driver from Albania, because this other car pulled up with these two sketchy-looking people inside, and they motioned for us to get in. They had to take the spare tire out of their car in order to fit our bags, which weren't very many bags.
This was the third cab.
Well, the second cab wasn't moving.
Right. I think he was doing maintenance, or he was on a break, and then he coordinated by phone the third cab with the other two individuals, and that's actually how we got across the border.
Yeah, and I think we had to pay 5 euro each to get that cab?
Yes.
Something like that? Okay. So basically, here we are sitting in a cab going from Montenegro into the Albanian, over the Albanian border, with two other people who speak no English, and it just it was a little weird, a little scary. But you know, we warmed up to it after a while. We did get over the border and drove into the countryside a bit, or desert side, whatever you want to call it. It seemed a little barren.
Yeah, a much more rural area than, you know, it's not near any very large cities, and the roads were sort of out of repair. But
we were in Albania. We were in Albania, and that was the most amazing thing. We took that cab to a fairly large city, not a city I had heard of before, but basically the cab stopped, people got out, and they started asking us in as best English as they could muster where we were trying to go, in Tirana, the capital. So they started pointing us to a corner where a bus was, a little minibus, and everyone around the area just seemed to help us getting to the bus to Tirana, how much it was going to cost, that kind of thing.
And it was definitely help that mm-hmm. these people were giving us. And you really, in these situations, you learn to set aside any sort of apprehension you have and put some trust in mm-hmm. the locals' knowledge, you know, how things work. And that was really an amazing experience for me.
It really was.
Trusting and then having it work so beautifully and mm-hmm. then getting from the outskirts near the border all the way in. And as you get closer to Tirana, it gets more and more built up as it's sort of it's a hub and everything else just centers around Tirana.
And Tirana was a real surprise. I was not expecting the city to be just so vibrant, full of life, open late at night. And of course, what do? We come in on May 1st, May Day, where they're having this this big demonstration, sit-in, hunger strike, all kinds of things. Major news, just nonstop coverage on all the Albanian media, and boy, was there a lot of that. Again, we'll get into this in a future show because we have all kinds of audio from that. So we stayed there for a few days, and then from there, the next stop was Kosovo, Pristina in Kosovo. And, of course, there was no way to get there by train. We found the train station in Albania. It was a very small station, very small trains, lots of dogs, lots of kids just hanging out. And we basically figured out a way to get on the bus. Every time you go to one of these cities, you have to figure out how you're going to get out of one of these cities. And that either involves going to the train station, looking up schedules, or finding out where the bus is and figuring out how to buy the ticket and just becoming familiar with the process so that when the time comes for you to actually leave, you know what you're doing.
This is especially true in Tirana. There is a train station there, but as you said, it's very, very small. And I mean, the train cars themselves have cracks and stuff like that. It's a very old system, but it works. But the locals don't take trains. Yeah. And on top of that, there's no central bus station in Tirana. It's seriously, you have to find out, emphasis, where the bus is.
Yeah,
so that was amazing.
They drop you on corners, literally. There are just congregation points where buses are. And that's something that we learned. And we just simply walked around the day after we got there. And we just saw a bus. So it said Pristina, however they spelled it in their particular language. And we found out what time that bus left. Originally, we were planning on going to Macedonia and then from there to Kosovo. Turns out that would have been a very bad idea because apparently if you try to get to what would have been our next destination of Serbia after going to Kosovo, they don't take kindly to that. What happens is they look at your passport and they say, well, wait a minute. You were in Kosovo, which they still consider to be part of Serbia. How did you get into Kosovo without getting a Serbian stamp? You got into Serbia illegally, and that could lead to all kinds of embarrassment and frustration. So by leaving Kosovo, going to Macedonia, and then from Macedonia into Serbia, okay, they'll overlook the fact that we ever went to Kosovo in the first place. But we did go to Kosovo, hung out in Pristina. Now, Kosovo's the latest country, and the newest country in the world, according to most people. There are still some that don't recognize it. We spent some time there in Pristina, marveling at that place. They use the euro as well. It's a very strange place because it's multinational. All kinds of peacekeeping forces are there, trying to make sense of it all and I guess bring the place back from the war that they had about 10 years ago. From there we took another bus. We wanted to take trains, but there just weren't any trains. It wasn't a very people didn't even know where the train station was in Pristina. We had to take a bus to Skopje in Macedonia. And here's the other thing. Okay, Skopje is how they say it, right?
Skopje.
Skopje.
Skopje, Macedonia.
It's spelled Skopje. So I was saying Skopje, or something like that. But, you know, when we took the bus, there was an Albanian. How do they pronounce it? Do you remember? Skop. They were saying Skop.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And they spell it completely differently. Yeah, I'm sorry. I blanked.
The Buster Skop. And
Skop.
But you're saying Skopje because that's how they say it in Macedonia. So what I'm saying is, why don't we say it the way we say it in our language rather than trying to pronounce it the way they say it? Since obviously the Albanians aren't interested in pronouncing it the way they say it. So why do we have to try to say it the way they say it? You know? Or better yet, why doesn't everybody say it the same way? You know? Why can't we all say Skop or Skopje or whatever? Why do the Albanians have to say Skop? Huh?
You raise a good point. Yeah, and, you know,
it sounds silly, I know, but it's, you know, Moscow, it's spelled Moskva if you look at it on a Russian map, you know?
Yeah, and Belgrade is Beograd.
B-E-O-G-R-E.
Belgrade?
Yeah.
Belgrade.
I just can't understand this. And if you go to Google Maps or Google Earth, you see on the world maps that all the countries and all the cities are spelled the way they're spelled in the native language, which I think is really cool, and it's a good way to do things. Anyway, so we went to Macedonia, to Skopje, or Skop, or Skopje, whatever you want to call it. Hung out there, great place, had a lot of fun there. And the final leg of the trip was to take a train back from Macedonia into Serbia. That was not to be, because apparently there was only one train leaving at 9 in the morning, and we didn't want to get up that early, so we decided, all right, one more bus into Serbia. Big mistake. Boy, that bus was the bus ride from hell.
That was not enjoyable.
Two hours at the border just sitting, waiting, because apparently something was broken. But we got across and finally made it to Belgrade. Had a great time there as well. And then flew back yesterday from Belgrade, Serbia, into JFK. And in two legs, we first flew JAT Airlines, which goes from Belgrade to, you know what, I can't say where we went, because you all understand when you hear this piece we're about to play, we can't say where we went.
You're absolutely right, yeah, we can't, sorry.
I almost did it, I almost blew
you
it.
I almost did it too.
Yeah, all right, we gotta be careful.
Got it.
So, and again, the volcanic ash was starting up again, and flights were starting to be canceled, so it was just this weirdness that was going on. The volcano was slowly trying to mess up our plans. We flew from Belgrade to this mystery place, and then from the mystery place we flew here. But what we discovered upon flying here was that the plane we were going to fly on was a really kind of amazing plane. You want to say very briefly why, and then we'll go into our audio from the airplane?
We flew on the largest passenger plane in the world.
Largest passenger plane in the world. Yeah. He speaks
the
truth.
The largest.
It really was. It was big. It was 2 hours late, too. I don't know why it was 2 hours late. I think it was because of the volcano or because of airspace problems or maybe because it was just so big they didn't know what to do with it. Who knows? Let's listen to what we were doing yesterday on the airplane, and we'll come back and tell you some more adventures that we had, maybe even take some phone calls here on Off the Wall.
How'd you do that?
I do things.
You got every single emoticon in your public chat room on the screen.
Yeah, because I typed them all.
What did you just run your fingers?
Pretty much, yeah. Ran my finger over the list.
Kind of like a keyboard and piano type thing. That's cool.
It is cool. We're on the airplane, by the way. We're on an amazingly big airplane. This is biggest airplane in the world. You said before, right?
Yes, we're on the biggest airplane in the world.
I mean, there's another one. Well, there's another one that this airline has. But, and I don't know how many others there are. Well, we can probably say what kind of airline it is. I mean, not airline, but airplane. We can say that, right? We just can't say the...
I'll say the model number.
You say the model number. We can't say the airline name, because that might constitute advertising, especially when...
I don't want to say the manufacturer either.
All right.
Can I just say the number?
Well, wouldn't you be saying the manufacturer?
All right, then we're not going to say...
Well, no, I think we should say something. Otherwise, it sounds kind of silly. We're on the biggest airplane in the world. It sounds like somebody who never went on an airplane before. Oh, my God, it's the biggest airplane in the world.
So what do I say?
It really is the biggest airplane in the world.
It's the biggest airplane in the world.
It can hold, what, over 500 people?
Almost 600.
Well, it's over 500 people, isn't it? Wow.
Well, over 600. I mean,
five. No, let's not exaggerate here. It's a big plane. It's got two stories. Actually, three, if you count... I guess, what's that, the galley downstairs?
Yeah, I saw people going downstairs, but I think it's crew. They have, like, a small galley and a break room, maybe. I don't know.
I always wanted to go down there, and, you know, I can't figure out a way to ever do that, other than launching a career in air travel, which I could do, but I'm not going to. Just to find out what's down there. Maybe somebody could write in and send us pictures, or just describe it really well, and tell us what goes on downstairs in airplanes. We know what goes on upstairs, because we went upstairs.
Yeah, we walked upstairs a little bit. There's a staircase in the front and the back of the plane.
Yeah, I didn't know it was that easy.
I think you actually walked all the way across, and then so you went up the back and then down the front. You did a big loop.
Well, no, what I did was I walked up the staircase in the back and walked all the way to the front until I was instructed not to walk any further. And then I turned around and came back and then walked down the staircase, then walked up the side of the airplane that we're not on our floor, up until the point where I was told not to walk any further. Then I just looped around and came back, accompanied by all sorts of security personnel. No, no, that's not true.
But they weren't nasty.
No, they weren't nasty at all. In fact, this has been an amazing ride on this airplane. And we really aren't going to say what kind of airplane it was. Going to say it's the biggest airplane in the world?
It's the biggest airplane in the world.
Can we say that at least the name of it begins with A? Can we say that?
A.
Well, a yes or a no, not an A. A isn't the answer. But can we say that it begins with a letter A?
Can we say, does it begin with an A? I said A.
Yeah, but that's not an answer to the question, is it?
Okay, yes, it begins with an A.
Okay. Well, you said it, because I just asked if I could say it, but it might be a lie. Okay. We've been up for a long time, so forgive us if we sound a little out of it. Also, we had lots of beverages.
Okay.
So an airplane, the biggest airplane in the world. And the model does begin with the letter A.
The biggest airplane in the world? Oh, yeah. Man, I'm tired, too. Okay, the biggest airplane in the world.
And the airline does have the name of a country in it. That, you know, I think it's fair to say that as well, but we won't say what country.
Yes.
But it is in Europe.
By the way, we only have 1 hour, 41 minutes, and 14 seconds left.
And that's with volcano time, because what they did was they added time. Well, first of all, they added time because of air congestion. What did they say? Was they ran out of space in the sky or something?
Airspace congested.
Airspace congestion, unable to find. There was something weird. I have a picture of it. In fact, I can look it up right now because we live in a digital age.
While you're saying that, I'd like to start with how we boarded it. It takes an hour to board the biggest airplane in the world.
It really does.
And so we were in this large waiting area, and then all of a sudden, 600 people were in line. And what they do is have several different people that check your ticket, and then you get on the plane, and you're... We were actually towards the end of the line, so it was really nice because we weren't sitting in our seats waiting for an hour or 2 hours, because by the time we got on, we had to wait at least, you know, 40 minutes before everybody was boarded, and everybody, you know, they had done the checks and started the engines, and they were actually really kind and let us switch and sit next to each other because there was one seat emptied. This is a fairly full flight, but there may or may not be a couple seats empty, and they're really, really nice about it. They said as soon as the boarding was done, you can switch, and so that's how we ended up staying.
So they're giving us more food. They're bringing out more food. This has been
That was the next thing, yeah.
We actually took two planes today. The first plane we took was, we can say this because we're not saying all that much about it, but I don't know how to pronounce it, JAT Airlines out of Belgrade, Serbia, I'm sorry. We flew that into, well, I'm not going to say the city we flew into because that might give away the airline. But when we got to that city, that's when we found out that this plane from there to JFK was delayed by something like 2.5 hours.
You've got it.
I found that on the picture, yes.
Oh, good.
Airspace overload, air traffic disrupted.
Oh, I love that.
I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's a strike, if they just have too many planes in the sky. But also what they did was, in addition to delaying the flight, well, the weird thing is they started boarding well before they said the plane was going to leave, like you said, over an hour. But what they had to do was fly around the volcano, which apparently has started up again. And this volcano has been affecting us from beginning to end. So we had to go sort of due north and over, I don't know what we went over, but well over the north of Iceland and Greenland.
Yeah, I believe it's Greenland because there was a lot of ice.
That's true.
And I've heard
a lot of ice over the North Pole, too. Might have gone over there.
Yeah, I don't think we went that far north.
No, okay, well... We're over Canada now, I think. We're heading down.
but it was brilliant. Walking around, you would be able to see like sheets of ice with like these lines showing slow movement, and there were even mountains, I think, you were able to see poking through the ice and stuff.
Big mountains of ice. Yeah, and you don't often see that because you don't often have a clear sky all the way down to the ground. So a lot of people were taking pictures out the window, and it was good fun for all. What I wanted to focus on was just the difference in service, difference in attitude that you get on these planes. The one from Serbia, basically, they just kept giving us stuff, which was very nice. And then, of course, it's all complimentary, unlike in the States. But this one that goes overseas, that goes from the unnamed country to JFK, they just keep bringing you things, and it's really good quality too. And alcohol is completely free, and we had all kinds of bottles of wine, and they even came around offering cognac later on, and that was really cool. That was a nice, classy touch, I think. And I see them starting to push things through again. I don't know if I want to get yet more wine or just settle for something a bit calmer, but it really makes the flight a lot better. And of course, the entertainment system is really kind of cool. Maybe to watch all kinds of movies. And there's a chat room. We started our own chat. There's a 2600 chat room on this airplane right now. Anybody in the airplane can join 2600. And it says, the owner is Emmanuel, which is appropriate, I suppose. And people can type messages, but no one has done it yet except for you.
So I logged in once, but I'm in the middle of a movie right now.
Yeah, you're
now.
In a movie. I don't
it's
know if you
paused,
can...
though. It's okay. I could quit the movie and get into the chat
room. The movie might remain paused after you go into the chat room. You know what? If it doesn't, I will personally hold my finger on it and fast forward to the point where you are now. You're watching Wild at Heart, which is a good film.
I don't think I can... Well, so how do I exit?
You haven't gotten to the part with the murder yet, have you? I'm sorry about that. Don't worry, we can edit that out. Oh, wait, that doesn't help you, does it? I'm sorry, listen, I've been up for a long, long time.
Look, exactly 1 hour and 35 minutes left in the movie, and we have 1 hour and 35 minutes left to destination.
Well, you know, they're not going to let you watch the movie until we land. It's going to be very frustrating for you because even if you were to start it right now, you're going to get right to the port where the cops are, like, running in on everybody.
Wait, stop.
Oh, my God. You know,
how do you do that?
I'm sorry. Listen, I'm trying.
Right, I'm stopping.
I'm trying not to. When you stay up a certain amount of time, your reasoning sort of takes a back seat.
You're forgiven.
Well, I wasn't really asking for forgiveness. I was just trying to explain.
Progress. No, I'm at the main menu.
What were we talking about?
The attention to detail.
Attention to detail, which I seem to be losing touch of.
And we'll get into the actual. Newness.
It's not the alcohol, this is the tiredness.
But, so you sit down in your seat, which is quite comfortable, and we are able to view the takeoff on our screens individually. So we watch the plane taxi through and then take off. Then
yeah, you can see it right from, it was up on the tail?
Yeah, there's three cameras. There's one on the tail, there's one on the very belly of the plane showing a top view of the Earth, and then there's one in the nose cone showing you the forward-looking view, what you might think the pilot is looking at. Hopefully he's looking at.
But he doesn't need to look at anything. This plane is run by computers.
Yeah, this
not that we're telling what kind of plane it is. It just begins with an A.
Yeah. There's
the biggest plane in the world.
On these planes, and, these
there's a server we connected to it.
Centers.
We connected to a chat server. There's a chat server we connected to. I don't know how that's being run, but
everything's on demand. There's no in-flight movie. Everybody just watches whatever they want, and you get amenities. You get a pack of headphones. You get the eye covers. You get earplugs, and you also get a towelette.
Those are always nice.
And this is the beginning of your complimentary amenities, okay? Then, you know, an hour in, maybe an hour in, once we've taken off. And I'll have to say, takeoff is very smooth. You can't really hear very much. It's not very loud in here.
If you listen for a second, you'll hear it's not that loud. I mean, you can hear the roar. No, it's not really that loud.
No, it's really quite a comfort. So takeoff was really smooth, and all of a sudden, you know, food service starts. They offered drinks first, I believe.
All kinds of drinks, yeah. That's very nice. I just wonder why it has to be so different overseas than it is in our country, because you just are in a much better frame of mind. Like, we have a little bit more leg room here. We have, you know, free food and free drinks and things like that. It makes the trip go a lot better.
And then after that meal, they came around and offered everyone cognac. And so...
And we could get more, too, anytime we want. We can just go up to the front and ask for more.
They actually have stations near where the flight attendants are at each point, and they actually put out a little bar so you can go and self-serve, scoop some ice cubes. And
wait, you didn't tell me that, really?
Oh, yeah, you didn't look?
No, I did. Well, I was busy trying to get upstairs.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you just go back, you ask the stewardess, yeah, you know what, don't even have to ask. They'll, you know, offer you something, or you just walk.
A rum and coke would be very nice.
Sure. I think these are more like just refreshments, and if you want an actual drink, you can ask, or they'll offer you once you show up. In fact, I was just trying to pass through, and they, you know, immediately turned to me and said, what would you like? So, and they've got pastries and stuff out, and oh man, looks like
more food's coming. Yeah, the thing is, when I get to customs in the U.S., I want to be hammered, and just in a better frame of mind, because it always upsets me whenever I go through there.
Yeah, they wouldn't have it any other way.
Uh-oh. And that's a bit loud, I think. That noise is, every time somebody presses a button, that noise happens. For some reason, whenever they make new things, they have to make the tones really loud, like on trains and cars and TV sets. And
it's probably set to the maximum, and they just really haven't found the volume or had anybody request to change the volume.
This plane is pretty brand spanking new, though. It smells like a new plane.
It's a brand new aircraft. Oh, you're right. New plane smell. Yeah. Yeah, I don't often get the new plane smell, but this is a brand new plane.
I had the new plane smell in a house once. It was weird. But it's better here.
It would be weird.
I'm quitting out of the chat room, by the way. Hang on, let me hit Y to quit. And do you want to destroy this channel? Yeah, that's what it says. Do you want to destroy this channel? What a great message.
Yeah.
Should I destroy the channel?
Yeah, destroy it for the time being. We can.
Because no one else is joining it.
Yeah, I know. It's a pretty lonely channel.
All right, I'm destroying 2600. Here I go. I'm hitting yes.
So the ambiance in this plane, it's very light. It's very big. We're on the bottom floor.
2600 has been destroyed. Yes, we're on the bottom floor. Well, not the bottom floor, but the bottom passenger floor.
Yes, we're in the lower section of the plane. It's very white and very light. I've noticed that they have LED lighting, what looks to be LED, and it seems to change colors. It's sort of light light purple on top, and then the windows have a darker purple. And it's especially noticeable when the shades are down and people were sort of sleeping. It's really, really interesting, the lighting, because it gives you sort of it creates a mood. And another thing is there's no vents up top. You can control your lights from these very complicated-looking remotes. Can I talk about the remote?
Yeah, talk about the remote. I'm playing with the remote right now.
So much. I mean, where do you start?
Sometimes the touch screen doesn't work quite right. I'm in relax line. Learn how to relax, but the button's not working, so I'm not relaxing. So I'm going to quit out of this and try to find something else.
Okay. Yeah. So you can do either touch screen or there's a large channel kind of remote. It's got a credit card reader in the side. There's... 4 buttons on the right, and then an arrow pad on the left that you might see on a game controller, because this can be used for games. And then there's
this is what I was looking for. In-flight trivia tournament, challenging and entertaining. You can either play by yourself or challenge any other passenger on this flight. Well, I'd like to challenge all other passengers on this flight, and let's see who's in there now, because I'm going to win this.
There's also a play, pause, stop. Just like for like the music selections, there's different channels for music, and then there's a very small color screen that shows you little indications like your volume and stuff like that. And you can also select screen in screen to see a map of, you know, while you're watching your movie, you'll have a map show up.
Multiplayer, I'm selecting. It took a long time for that to load.
We'd really like to see more of that screen in screen stuff. You can do it with the map, so I can press your screen in screen.
Can you make multiplayer work? Because only single player is flashing.
No, maybe that doesn't work. Okay, so maybe I can't. Maybe I hold it down.
This is kind of frustrating. I want to. Maybe nobody else is playing. Maybe it's impossible. Hang on, more food is coming. Thank you.
So the screen and screen doesn't work when you're doing trivia. I think, what do you need? Single player?
Well, I want to go to multiplayer.
All right, we can also use the controller. It's got a arrow button.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Okay. So you're the master of this.
Yeah, well, why?
Let's see. What would be good? I guess tea would be good. Yeah. Wait, how did my name become Bob? Thank you.
Monsieur?
It says your name is Bob.
You've been called worse.
You know, I'd like you to run the same thing.
Oh, yeah?
And see if your name is Bob, and if your name is Bob or not, we can play against each other at least. This was, what game was it? Puzzle Games.
Puzzle Games?
Yeah.
Okay, Puzzle Games, yeah. So, as I was saying, they need more screen and screen because we had to leave the chat room to do games.
And it was trivia torn.
Got it. Okay. Trivia torn.
And hit play.
Okay. Good. And so you can't chat while you're watching a movie. Like, say you were watching a movie, you wouldn't be able to be, you know, seeing sort of a crawler of your friends logging in and that kind of thing. So there's still some. It's very one at a time. I don't know how you say that. You can only do one thing at a time, and that's kind of a bummer, because, you know, maybe...
It's an airplane, not a Unix system.
Right, maybe I'm watching, you know, the trivia tournament, and then I want to check...
Please select multiplayer for you.
I'm sorry, yeah, I'm talking to... Well, you know, we got...
All right, I see who you are.
Got a lot going on. All right, I am...
Your name is Lee. How is it? What's going on here? This thing is naming us. You know, this happened on the Malaysia flight, too. We had different names. I'm going to quit and go back in. I'll bet, see if my name changes. Because it was doing that on a Malaysia flight. This is rather strange and a little scary. Okay, I'm going to select multiplayer again.
So, they've given us orange juice.
How do I select multiplayer? I'm trying to press it. Are you confused by the orange juice?
Milk. This is some sort of yogurt milk type thing.
Well, I'm going to ask questions. It's probably...
I'm sorry, I'm distracted.
Yeah. I just want to select multiplayer. I'm stuck.
You have to. Yes, multiplayer. Absolutely.
Well, how do I select it?
Oh, why?
Hey. My name is still Bob. All right. You know what? Let's just start the damn game and see what happens. Oh, I got to hit Y to start the game.
We also have a couple cookies and cream for coffee. This looks like a light breakfast.
Oh, for God's sake. It picked the game for me. I wanted to... you got to select the game, too. Just hit Y to join.
Yeah, Y.
According to legend, which Greek writer died when an eagle dropped a tortoise on his bald head? Well, I don't think that happened to Homer or Sophocles, so I'll pick this guy, the first choice, whose name I can't even pronounce. How do I pick? Y, select answer, okay. Yeah. I got it right.
Wait, how come
you're about to join.
Oh, I'm about to
join. Yeah, next question. Is in 20 seconds.
All right.
Next game is in 21 minutes.
Yeah. So this will be a 20-minute game.
We'll just do this for one question. I know it's like watching paint peel.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question in 5 seconds.
Yeah, I'm ready for this. All right.
And here we go. Oh, it's going to randomize. 1,500 points.
All right.
Who won the War of the Roses? The House of Lancaster, the House of York, the House of Windsor, or the House of Bourbon? I'm going to go for Bourbon. Oh, wait, I don't know how to... okay. And then I select that by hitting Y. And you picked the House of Windsor?
Yes.
Okay. Did you select it, or did you just... it says please wait for other players. 5 seconds left.
As far as I know...
Okay, I think you...
No, I think I did it.
I'm wrong, and you're wrong. We're both wrong. The War of the Roses left little mark on the common English people, but severely thinned the ranks of the English nobility. The House of York, actually, is the winner there. Okay.
One more question.
Yeah, let's do one more. What's going to do it for us?
So, yeah.
It's fun when you're playing an entire airplane. But as you can see, I'm ahead of you. I have 20 points, you have zero. No good answer on that one.
Wow.
Okay, can we have our food now? Because I think we've talked long enough, and they're giving us the eyeball here. We'll talk more about this on the show. But it's a fascinating airplane, biggest airplane in the world. That's all we're going to say about it. Just an amazingly different way of traveling than what we're used to in the States.
Yeah, I'm thrilled.
It's a big moment for you when you saw the airplane.
I grew up in Seattle and still live there. And can I say this company? Well, I think I should.
Well, it's not the one that we're on now. We can say that.
No.
Yeah, you can say the name.
We're on A, and I'm referring to B, and that would be the Boeing Aircraft Company. And, you know, I like to... I'm an aerospace nerd, and I really am into fuel and flying and that kind of thing. And so I've been on quite a few Boeing planes in my day, and I've been on some smaller versions of this company's planes, but this is a real treat. I've only been on one of the larger Boeing planes, and... I'd say they've got some work cut out for them, because this is really an impressive way to fly. The feeling that you're in this sort of city with a bunch of other people. I mean, we're gonna go on. I'll think about this and elaborate. But it's an amazing experience
and smooth, very smooth.
Yeah, and the attention to detail.
They haven't landed yet though, but it's smooth so far.
The way that these airlines are handling this resource, this tool for transporting people, it synchronizes so well, and it really makes it enjoyable.
For us to be saying this 2 hours late, you know, means that, wow, it must really be the case. But keep in mind, the airplane is one thing, the airline is another, and to have both work in a positive way, that's an accomplishment.
I think, you know, it's impressive on both fronts, and it's really, it's a good case for seeing what other routes the largest plane in the world takes.
All right. Well, we'll be on the ground in just a moment. All right, we're on the ground now. We're back in the studio, in fact. But that was an excerpt from yesterday on. In case you didn't hear, the largest airplane in the world that we were on yesterday. I don't know how many of them there actually are. This particular airline has two, according to their...
There's 42 of them.
Are there 42? Okay.
Yes.
Well, you went to the Wikipedia page, didn't you?
I looked up a couple things, and I do remember there's at least 42, and it came into service in 2007.
Well, imagine 8 hours of that. That was pretty much the state we were in, because we were up for a long time and had those beverages, and it was nice. It was pleasant.
Wasn't that fun?
It was a soothing way to come back into the States, and customs wasn't that bad, so everything worked out. Took a long time to take the Long Island Railroad out here, but we worked that out too. But in the limited time we have left, and time really did fly today, I want to tell the story of what happened before we started the voyage home, because we had kind of a special circumstance. Kyle here is a professional photographer. He takes lots of film pictures. Film, by the way, is what used to be used to take pictures back in the day before the internet and digital things.
Only recently started to get back into it personally, but I work at a school where they do a lot of analog.
And you have a camera, really cool camera that was built in 1957?
1957, I bought it.
And you've been carrying it around Europe, and everybody's admiring it, and you're taking all these pictures with film. But thing is, you use high-speed film. What are the numbers on it?
Yeah, I bought the camera through a classified ad at the school, and
But the film is 3200?
Yeah, it's a large or medium format camera, and this type of camera uses 120 millimeter.
Okay. So what that basically means is you can't X-ray this. You can't put this through an X-ray machine. If you do that, what happens?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, 120 millimeter is the format size of the film. And specifically, I was using high-speed film, and what you're referring to is the ISO, and that's the film's speed, the speed with which it reacts to light. And this high-speed film is really great for interior and low-light situations, and you can do a lot of really cool stuff with it. And so the downside is you cannot X-ray this film at all, because it's really, really sensitive. And the guidelines, they vary, but they're generally between 100 and 800, even 1,000. Any higher than that, you cannot X-ray. And this was 3,200.
So basically, coming over was not a problem. This is something that they know about. But on the way back, we were going through Belgrade, Serbia, and first thing that happened after we got checked in, we were going through security, and they seemed to know nothing about this. They were basically saying, no, everything has to be X-ray. They're pretty obstinate about that. And it just it looked like things were going to reach some kind of an impasse here, because there was no way we were going through with high-speed film having your hard work destroyed, or, you know, even the risk of it being destroyed. It's a pretty high risk, I think.
This is my livelihood, my artistic, you know, put a lot of effort into this and documenting the trip, and, you know, to be turned away and stuff is pretty... not something we wanted to do. And we've been very lucky on this trip. Absolutely every single airport prior to this has been so cooperative and so understanding, and I really thank them because you know, none of the film, developed or undeveloped, was X-rayed at all on this trip.
Right, right. And now, up until this point, where it seemed like we could not get past this barrier. Now, the person downstairs was obstinate about this. She said, I don't have X-ray eyes. I can't see what's in there. I have to put it through the X-ray machine. And we just kept trying to explain to her, no, it's high-speed film. You can't do that. She said, go back to the ticket agent people and ask them. I don't know why we had to go back to them. Of course, they knew nothing about it. They told us to go back to security.
You had a great idea down there. You said, log into Wi-Fi, get some documentation. And the TSA has a really good site that explains specialty films and all the exceptions and reasons why you might not want to get them X-rayed. And we got that on screen.
Because I think it's better to walk up to somebody and say, look, here is what it says on this particular site, rather than, and, you know, no offense to you for the way you were doing it, but you were walking up to these people holding a cardboard box in your two hands and just kind of slowly walking up to them and saying, here, right, look at this. This cannot go through the X-ray. When they open it, these little canisters,
right,
just really, you know, to their credit, they didn't freak out at that. But I could see how there might be some trepidation. Having the website, having something like you had on the Ilford film, it said, do not X-ray. Those things are good. And keeping a pleasant demeanor, but being firm, that's important.
At that point, the second time when we had documentation, we went back upstairs. I actually started clutching my passport and my boarding pass, because I figured that communicates where my priorities are. Let the box just sit there. Mm-hmm. And it's not as crazy looking. And the woman came back, and this time she actually agreed to get her chief. And that was as far as she would go. And another woman that was working the metal detector, she started saying, you know, because I guess word got around the chief was coming. She said, oh, this chief, he's not going to be very helpful. Yeah, he's not going to be he's disagreeable.
You don't want to talk
to him. I'm just telling you, today is not the day.
Yeah, you don't want to talk to the chief. It's a Monday, and he's had a rough weekend. You know, basically trying to convince us that, I don't know if it was good cop, bad cop, or what, but she was just trying to convince us to drop this and move on, which we weren't about to do. And that's another important thing. When you're in a situation like this, you don't back down.
Yeah,
you don't turn on each other. You don't say, okay, let's just give up this battle. No, we would not have flown, period.
I'm really thankful to you for being there and being helpful, being calm, and kind of giving me the coaching I needed in the moment, because as an independent, you know, it's tough, and you want to get really passionate and stuff, but it's just not the way to handle it with people that are being, you know.
Well, I mean, you have to be able to be passionate, but at the same time, not in a way that's going to alienate them, not in a way that's going to make them just become your enemy. You have to ingratiate yourself
win
with people,
them, yes,
win them over, get them on your side, and once you do that, then it'll be a lot easier to explain to somebody else when they come along, and you will eventually, hopefully, get through. And if you don't, well, then you deal with that. But you don't back down.
And you would be amazed at the results. When you create that possibility, you're amazed that, oh, wow. So the chief comes, and what did we find out?
He was a big guy. He was really big. He was like a football player.
Yeah, he's a big guy. But he just he looked at it. He shook some of them, sort of you know, squeezed them, grabbed the ones that were still in packaging, and, you know, kind of crinkled them, listened to them a little bit.
He, big, he's thick, like, Serbian accent, this guy talks.
He just says, yeah, he just looks and says, you know, okay, it's okay. And
It's okay.
Pretty matter of fact about it. He seemed like, oh, okay. You know, as soon as he had seen it, he's like, kind of, what's the big deal? You know, you know, basically one thing led to another, and he allowed us to go, and he was like, oh, it's okay. You know, but you got to be careful with that. They do the okay thing and walk away, and then you know, they still got other staff that are kind of directing you.
He said it's okay, so we weren't sure if he meant, okay, it's okay to go through without X-raying it, or it's okay to put this through the X-ray. You know, no, let's be clear about this. It's okay, so please take this and don't go through the X-ray. And of course, I had to run back and check our bottles of wine, which we forgot about. We couldn't bring those on board. So when I came back, he was still there, and he, like, you know, slapped me on the back, said, "Oh, you know, I believe you, film people. I believe you." And that's very congenial and nice. And it was a nice human moment, I think.
It did work out, and I was able to get it. I just handed it, and the woman, she walked it around the metal detector. I went through, had to go back and help with some of the other bags, but they were okay with us. We had won them over, kind of been charismatic, and we got what we needed to do. And it was really interesting, but you know.
We had to do it again, actually, in the Mystery City, which we're not going to mention, but we went to the other city. And somehow, for some reason, you have to exit and go through security again because somebody wasn't in the EU or something. So, okay, we had to sort of have the same discussion again. And also, there was a second screening point in Belgrade. So we actually had to have this battle two more times. But we held our guns and got through each time. But what I asked you at one point after going through all this, I said, Kyle, it's okay to walk through this thing through the metal detector with these film canisters, just not the X-ray machine. He said, yes. And I said, well, okay, then why don't you simply put them in your pocket and walk through the X-ray machine? And there was this long pause while you realized that no one had ever thought of doing that before. But you actually did have a very good reason why that might not be a good idea.
That's a fantastic idea, though. Like, I can't believe no one's ever thought of it. I was sitting there and I said, what? Wait. Oh, what? No, yeah, that would work.
Because I originally thought of swallowing them. That, you know, that would be painful, but that is how people like to get some things across.
In various situations, yeah. And
but not this one.
That was brilliant, and I might even consider that if I'm doing a shorter trip, just so no questions, you know, you can get through very quickly. And
What was the reasoning for not doing that? They had a very good reason.
My point is full disclosure, and basically, if you have a cargo pocket stuffed with film, and you make it through, but for whatever reason you're pat down, then they're digging through your pockets and they're asking you, what are these? Then you're saying it's film, and you're trying to explain after you've already been sort of sneaky and withholding information. That's just kind of a point against you.
And that's the opposite of winning them over, then
you've really got somebody. When you say I'm a professional and you're really honest and you're being honest and you're it's full disclosure, and I think people respect that, and also it gives them, you know, that's their job, and people like this, when they do the same thing over and over again, they love special circumstances to get all up in arms and figure out what to do, and so, you know, it gives them something to break from their routine, and I just think that you would have to backtrack and try to explain, well, I only smuggled these through because I didn't want to have to go through X-ray. And then are they going to be likely? I don't know. It just seems like it would be messy.
Well, the important thing is we stuck together. We got these things through three checkpoints. And I just want to say it's a real shame we left them on the biggest airplane in the world. If everybody sees these film canisters, please.
We didn't leave them. I have all of them. Okay. You are so... Okay. Right, stop right there.
All right, but we are going to get them developed really quickly to see if, in fact, you were shooting without the lens cap on or something. You know, that would be nice.
Absolutely. And we even have some of the high speed that went through two low-level X-ray machines. So we're going to be testing film, high-speed film that has gone through X-ray, just to see what happens. I shot some rolls on the largest plane in the world. So,
if anyone has suggestions or experiences they'd like to share with these particular circumstances, getting high-speed film through X-ray machines or past X-ray machines, or any other travel things, or just comments on things we've said today, write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear your feedback and your perspective. Well, Kyle, it's been great. I think you'll be back here next week as well.
I very well may, yes.
All right, and of course I will be as well, and we'll both be at Off the Hook tomorrow. Fundraiser tomorrow, so please be sure to show your support to that particular station and that particular show. Till then, have yourselves a good week, and we'll see you next time.
Hey kids, Finn here. Personally, you know, I just clicked my heels to get to Albania, but that's just me. I thought it was a mythical place, or, you know, maybe that's because I always swallow everything I have before I get off a plane, call an ambulance, and I'm off. But anyway, Finn's Revolution tonight, back in the saddle. Plenty of giveaways. Stay tuned.
Goodbye. demon within me pulling at me. I wish I could leave the past behind. I drink whiskey and try to forget. That just shows the pain even more. Maybe if I started out running, I could find what I'm looking for. There must be